John W. Travis, MD, out of medical school, said he didn't want to see sick people. He said, if you're sick, go somewhere else. When you get over your illness, come and see us and we'll help you get well. This caused quite a stir. He founded the first wellness center, Mill Valley, California. A nurse from our health service went to that center for one of their workshops. She came back with John's wellness workbook, and it changed the course of events in Stevens Point. He had a lot of training, too, by the way, but I'm not going to read all this. He's a fellow Ohio native. We grew up about 30 miles from each other. We never ran into each other until I met him in San Diego, I think, on the floor in a conference. We were doing some work. I don't know what it was. You'll hear more about this.
It's February 1st of this year, the height of the Australian summer. I've just moved to northern New South Wales, and my daughter and I are swimming in the mouth of the Brunswick River at the KidSafe Beach, and we took our boogie boards out to where I wanted to explore some surf, and suddenly we're swept out in a tidal current that we didn't know about, and we're drowning. My daughter's panicked. I'm panicked. There's a crowd forming on the jetty trying to motion us to do something while we were doing what we could do. We knew there was a beach. I knew there was a beach to the south. We were trying to get that direction instead of the rocks where the current was taking us. And I couldn't make it. We lost our boogie boards. We were getting knocked under by these big waves. And just when I thought that was it, and what a crappy way to die in front of my daughter, who was doing a lot better than me, and this last wave that knocked me under, I hit sand, and I stood up. Or I could stand up, and she saw that I could stand up and worked her way in, and we staggered ashore. So I guessed that my work wasn't done. I was waiting for my life to pass before my eyes. It didn't. What I want to tell you today is what my work is that I guess is not done. I would like to leave you with one thought, if anything, this morning. One key to saving the planet. And I'll save that to the end. But that's what I've been doing for the last 15 years, trying to make the wellness workbook obsolete. I think this is the most important work on the planet, and it's under the radar of most people, including most of the wellness movement. If you know the Enneagram, I'm a one, which is the reformer. We know how it's supposed to be, and this ain't it. This has been a struggle for me from the start. I think I'm from another planet. And I learned from Elaine Sullivan many years ago that within our wound is our gift, and that our personal journey is what it's all about. What I want to do is share some of my personal journey and some of the conclusions and my hopes for the future based on that. This word connection comes from two Latin words, and I'd like you to consider, what if connection was the currency of wellness? I now look at everything in wellness in terms of the connection or lack of connection with myself, with my body, with my mind, with my spirit, with other people, on and on and on. And where does connection come from? It's a new paradigm. I think it's the root of all wellness, spelled either way. And Michelle O'Donnell has found that what happens to you those 9 months before you come out of the uterus is more important than any factors afterwards, the rest of your life. how what you experience in utero is more important than any exercise you do, any diet, any whatever. He's got a database to back this up. So when we're born and we come into the world, we're already connected to our mother, but this connection is frequently destroyed by the medicalization of birth and a number of other factors I'm going to show you. The old paradigm, well, this is the paradigm of partnership, the new paradigm. The old paradigm comes out of the medical model where we fix people, we judge other people's lifestyles and wellness. We know better and we try to change it. Now, nurture is so important because at birth, our brains are largely unformed and they're going to be shaped or wired by what we experience. And I'm so glad Belle Ruth talked about PTSD yesterday. It saved me a lot of time because I think most of us, not just the percentage that she writes about, but most of us have experienced a form of PTSD so early in our lives that we don't even know it. James Prescott at NIH called it SSAD, somatosensory affectional deprivation syndrome, when he was at NIH in the 70s, and he got fired for his efforts after 15 years. Produced the Time Life video called Rockabye Baby that describes it all. I don't have time to go into this, but it's the science behind what I'm trying to describe, this lost connection. So it's this deep longing for the connection that most of us didn't get and don't even know we didn't get that shows up as most of the modern world's problem. And I'm going to try to evidence that. I took this at lunch yesterday because it's really the key. I don't know if this man is here or not. I warned him I might use it. There is a myth in our culture that you can spoil a baby. And that is the most destructive myth in our culture. You cannot spoil a baby. And that very word is the problem. What happens when we are attempting not to spoil the baby? In our fears of making them too dependent, what we do is avoid meeting their basic mammalian needs. And this is something Bill Hettler knew way before I did. If you've ever seen him carrying babies or grandbabies around here, it's a clue to the answer that I'm going to conclude with. But we don't do this. We put them in plastic buckets. We make them sleep alone. We do all these things to deny them the mammalian needs of our bodies, breast, eye contact, and the scent of a human being that's related to them due to lack of time and convenience. The other thing we do is coercion. Instead of connection, what we use is coercion parenting, which is epitomized by this horrible TV show called Super Nanny, which is exactly the wrong way to do it. Because what's happened is a kid, the kids that they use in this show, have not had their needs met, have escalated the behaviors trying to get their needs met, and instead of meeting the needs, we try to extinguish the behavior and it just gets worse. So the key is decoding that behavior, learning how to recognize it, like you learn how to recognize when a dog goes to the door, you let them out, or they'll pee on the floor. And you don't punish them for peeing on the floor, because that need isn't going to go away. You learn how to open the door, meet their need. Now the forms that this disconnection or coercion occurs are medicalized births, and there's a recent study showing that home birth is actually safer than hospital birth for normal pregnancies. Not to mention the incredible cost of it. Circumcising, bottle feeding, putting kids in cribs, ferberizing them, if you saw Meet the Fuckers, when De Niro talks about they're ferberizing this poor kid, and Barbara Streisand says, well, in the continuum concept, which is the book that changed my life 15 years ago, so it's getting out there, carrying them in plastic containers, the shaming that we do, the punishing and rewarding. Behavioral stuff doesn't work. That's a whole story in itself. And then we expose them to all the authoritarian institutions that we've created to try to replace the lost village that we destroyed. Now a little bit of personal journey. I found this picture in my dad's stuff. I'd never seen it. It wasn't in my baby book. And it was the only picture, is the only picture of my mother and me together. And a number of people have seen very different things. Attachment specialists see disconnection here. I saw the hope of connection. but it's a kind of Rorschach test. I won't have time to ask you what you see, but I often do that as an opening. This is pretty much what my childhood was like. Funny but not funny. I had made a decision very early on. I was on a 4-hour Bible feeding schedule, the standard 40s child rearing program. I checked out. I went into my head. I left my body. I've had a 62-year out-of-body experience that's been an ongoing challenge for me. I had a little bit of fun. But this is more like what most of it was like. And at this age, I made the decision to become a doctor. I thought that I could earn the love and respect that I saw my dad's patients giving him if I could follow in his footsteps. And that was a 22-year-long journey of mostly torture when I came out the other end and decided I didn't want to do sick care. But that led me into wellness. We were spaced pretty closely, and we didn't get along very well. My brother, we really hated the fact that my brother existed, and you can see it. He knew it. Little gallows laughter here. So I became a nerd. This is my high school science project. Why isn't that thing working right? In my last year of college, I met a girl who seemed to really like me and gave me lots of attention. How unusual. And the second year of med school, we got married for all the wrong reasons. She was programmed to marry a doctor. I was programmed to marry anyone that would love me. And 6 years later, after a lot of struggles, when having an MD and being married, neither of them solved all the problems that made everything all okay, it was have a baby or get divorced, and divorce wasn't an option in my family. So reluctantly, I became a father. 1972, this was taken a year later. And it was the beginning of a very strong lesson that I'm still learning. It's what I'm writing my next book about. And after 2 years of intense therapy, when I basically withdrew as the two of them bonded and I felt like the odd man out, it led to our separation when she was 3 and my basically abandoning her. They stayed on the East Coast. I went back to California to start the Wellness Center. I had 4 or 5 years of working on my own, meeting really powerful people, and then I met my Australian wife at our last seminar that we did at the Wellness Center. Thanks to Don Ardell's book. She read it in Australia and decided to come study with us. So we work with helping professionals. I learned about partnership and feminist spirituality and all these things that through her. And after 12 or 13 years, I read the continuum concept. I realized, hey, it could be different. It didn't have to be the way it was for me and the way it was for my first daughter. And so we talked about having a child. We'd concluded neither of us from our own childhoods wanted to inflict that on anyone else. And so things changed. Her biologic alarm went off. She was approaching 40. And so we gave birth at home underwater with a midwife. This was the morning after when I bonded with Sienna, as we named her. She didn't like that name and changed it 10 years later, but it's another story. Family portrait at about 6 months. And again, about 6 months later, if you notice my eyes, you can see them kind of checking out again. They were really bonded. I was aware of the importance of this bond and doing everything I could, but it was bringing up all my stuff in spades again. And it was then that I came up with a hypothesis and wrote an article in our newsletter called Why Men Leave. My hypothesis that most people under 70 who didn't bond with their mother because of the normative abuse I'm going to show you in a few minutes, the standard child-rearing practices, these people are out there looking for the mommy they never had. They find her and marry her, And things seem to be getting better until she has a baby. And a hidden epidemic that doesn't get acknowledged is the high percentage of men who leave shortly after the birth of a baby. And if they don't leave physically, they leave emotionally, as my dad did. And that side effect of this profound disconnection in our culture is a huge undiagnosed epidemic. Conclude with a few pictures of Sienna before she changed her name to Juniper. And taken at Father's Day last year, some people thought the one on your left is my wife. That's my 33-year-old daughter. And one of the grandchildren, her beagle, she's starting to think about having biologic grandchildren. So that's the little personal journey motivation for this work from my perspective. And I share it with you to encourage you to look at your own personal journey and how that affects what your mission in life, what your goals are, and how you live it. So I mentioned Prescott, the guy at NIH who came up with this SSAD, a form of PTSD that I believe is rampant. And here are some of the outcomes from it. Prescott said addictions, all different kinds, violence or aggression shows up in these forms. And depression. These are the big three that Prescott named. When I got thinking about it, I realized there were a few more. That most of the chronic illnesses we deal with are a result of people being disconnected from their bodies, including heart disease and cancer, the immune problems. The greed that's running and destroying the planet. There is a book called Voluntary Simplicity, and another book called Your Money or Your Life. And my wife and I took a vow of voluntary simplicity back in 1980 when we moved to Costa Rica, and we've lived on under $20,000 a year for the last 25 years. With a child, it's getting to be a little difficult, but there are some very creative ways that you can learn to live simply. As the gap between the rich and the poor increases, leading to a probable economic collapse. That's the best indicator of previous economic collapses, is when that ratio gets too high, things fall apart. And as our standard of living has decreased since the 50s, it takes two people working several jobs to try to do what one could do before. The hidden epidemic of absent fathers that I just mentioned. Fundamentalism, black and white thinking, trying to dominate the world. And ecocide, the destruction of the planet. People who are bonded to the earth don't destroy the nest that they live in. And we're seeing these factors now with also peak oil and the belief that we're going to have cheap energy. Things are going to change dramatically. We pay $4 a gallon for gas in Australia, so it seems cheap here. Now, the hunter-gatherers worked less than 20 hours a week and then partied, so something a little different here. Are we any happier, healthier, more secure? Thanks to Homeland Security and other frauds. The cost to culture is astounding, where we spend our money. All of these are efforts to replace the lost village that we destroyed when we lived tribally. From our military, the cost of crime, prisons, the so-called welfare system, our out-of-control sick care system, global pollution, and the hidden costs of that, and name a few more. A little transition here. A solution. Now that I've... Anyone not distressed by all this? I like to raise more questions than I answer and stir stuff up. They call me a stirrer in Australia. I think Ben Franklin had his numbers off a bit. He was on the right track, but the focus on prevention and the money spent on it is minuscule compared to the amount of money we throw at trying to fix problems that we could prevent. Now, my efforts in this area, beginning 10 years ago, were to found, with a group of other people, the Alliance for Transforming the Lives of Children, chosen deliberately to get the initials TLC in there. We started meeting in 1999 and spent 10,000 hours putting together what we call the blueprint for transforming the lives of children. It's principles and actions. And I didn't get my handout in time for the CD, so you'll have to download it at atlc.org. My apologies. I thought they were going to hassle me, and they didn't. And oops, I missed that deadline. We think this is the missing instruction manual. It's far from complete, and it's not very readable yet. It's a source document, but we've put in all this effort, including 300 research students who documented much of it. It's evidence-based connection parenting versus the coercion model, which is the norm and what 90% of the books are about out there. And there is no evidence to support the coercion-based parenting. There is no evidence, and I think that the burden of proof is on the people that suggest these strange ways of raising kids done by men in lab coats. So our alliance has nearly 100 affiliates and 50 international experts, and we've convened two international summits where we developed or further validated what we had developed. And now what we're doing is trying to apply it. Just to remind you, if you're getting a little ticked off at naming, there's some truth here. And one of my maxims is teaching what we need to learn, or our gifts are in our wounds. Just a reminder of that, as I tend to forget it. And this little-known fact that each young child requires 3.578 adults to begin to meet their needs. Now, 99% of statistics are made up on the spot, and this is no exception, but it's certainly more than one or two people to raise a kid. And the nuclear family disaster, as I call it, is just that. It takes a village to raise a whole child. A friend of mine turned the words around. I liked the way he played with it. And we don't have those villages, so we're looking at, with the Alliance, a way to replace that by what we call the Family Support Network that's just begun, which is a mentoring program for parents called the Warm Line. It's not a hotline, but you can, when you really need someone to just listen to you, and you've got a problem with parenting, you're a parent or a caregiver, we are assembling a team of people who can be there to listen to you and point you in the direction. We don't give advice, but point you in the direction of information, like from our blueprint and also through some teleclasses, and to create local support groups where possible. And also to build a network among the mentors, who most of them are alone in their work, fighting upstream with the prevailing wisdom that says to do it just the opposite of what we found does work. So this unique feature of being there and listening to people is the best medicine I can think of to counter the prevailing conventional wisdom of don't spoil them or make them independent. We just got a scanner and she wanted to see how it worked. Now, I'm very quickly going to scan through this at warp speed. This is a little model I put together of the factors necessary, practical applications, in a context of those are the four dimensions I developed in wellness, the four corners, back in 1976. And I've thrown in some other factors in between that I think are the context that is ideal for raising a child. And then, if possible, to have a conscious conception. Most aren't, but when you're aware at least that there's a child on board, to nurture that child, because those first 9 months before they're even born are the most important. And then what Lamaze is now calling normal birth, trying to take back normalcy. The five components of what's called attachment parenting and some other factors. Introducing 50 shots of antigens to a child's undeveloped immune system before they're six has never been researched, let alone the mercury that has been in the vaccines. And as the article in Mothering Magazine said, show us your numbers, and they aren't there. Interdirected learning, a lot of things. We did homeschooling with my daughter for the first 5 years. Now she's in a Waldorf school. So what was missing in that model? Just some of the things that are standard, the equipment. I'm going to do this really quickly. A little more what's missing. The average age for weaning is believed to have been between 4 and 7. The UN says 2+ years. The American Academy of Pediatrics just went to 1 year from 6 months about 2 years ago. Spanking is outlawed in many European countries. So, conclusions. The simple but not easy answers. Trust your intuition. Children do know what they need, and they're asking for it all the time. And it ain't rocket science if you pay attention to your intuition. So learn how to decode behavior. And also create the support. If you're a grandparent, if you're a parent, you know, do what it takes to try to get the support that you need. We brought my mother-in-law over from Australia and my sister-in-law when Santa was little, and we needed those arms. So the one single most important public health measure that I think we could do, this is what I primed you, I would say at the end, and Bill Hettler knew it long ago, is to hold those babies. Some cultures, they don't even touch the ground till they're 40 days old. In arms, the connection, the movement, what Prescott discovered is that movement, the rocking motion of being jostled, a sling. I sometimes wear a sling with a teddy bear in it to demonstrate how easy it is to carry a baby. Bill was telling me yesterday I took a baby into a boardroom at a consulting job he did at Ford Motor. Babies belong in the world with the rest of us, not off in a nursery somewhere. We never had to be quiet around her. She'd sleep through anything. So holding babies is probably the most important thing we can do to change the way our world is going. Much of the focus on abuse and trauma is on the extreme out there in the two standard deviations edge where all the attention is, but it's those of us in the middle of the bell-shaped curve who experience normative abuse or neglect that's not even recognized that shows up in our own disconnection in all these other ways. So if there's one thing I can get across, it's get this on the radar screen. This is the most important aspect of wellness there is, and I hope the next generation won't need the wellness workbook. Thank you.